Fish number 16729, William Ridley, reel 22.
Mr. Ridley, reel 22. The troop ship you're coming back on, was a typical troop ship? Similar to the one you'd gone out on?
Yeah, well, it wasn't as crowded. I mean, you weren't sleeping on top of each other. And when we come out, I mean, we come out on the older Jonah, that she used to catch the convoy up at noon, and then when it become dark, the same thing happened. They used to leave her behind, like, you know. It was a pretty rackety old ship, the Arjuna. But this one was a New Zealand boat, I think. Can't remember his name, but I remember that scrap. 3 o'clock in the morning, there was a queue of about 30 or 40 men waiting for to be treated at first aid posts with busted nose and busted heads, you know.
I think the Scots had a reputation for being somewhat volatile and drink.
Well, when they had the whiskey into them, I mean, they would walk through a door, like, you know. But there was also a lot of married women on, you know, what we used to call married pads, like, you know. And they always come back. Of course, we didn't see them, like, you know. The only time we saw them was if there was a concert on. And I don't know where they were in the ship, like, you know, but we were just in hammocks. They were.
How did you manage the hammock with basically one arm?
With great difficulty, you know. You get used to doing things with one hand, you know.
The medical people on the ship, like yourself, were they just mixed up with the other traps that
were coming back? No, I can't remember any medical people as such. There was first aid people, like, you know, in a little surgery place, like, you know, but it wasn't. It was just a trooper, you know.
And you weren't kept separate because of wounds.
Well, we were. I mean, we automatically were grouped together, like, you know. I mean, we didn't mix with the jocks or anything like that. We were in separate places. Like, it's gone back a long time. I can't remember really. I'm not sure if we're in hammocks or not, when I come to think about it.
But the routine was typical troop ship routine.
They were done out. The mummies had a boat call now and again, like, you know, but no, we just made your own. Most of the lads used to get cards going and things like that. There was nothing organised. Not that I can remember.
Were you escorted? Was it a convoy situation?
No, I can't remember, but I don't think so, because it was a fast ship. And it went right out in the Atlantic, like, you know. I think she was by herself.
When did you get home? Arrived in England.
Oh, I can't remember the date. Nowhere.
Was it end of 42, early 43, that kind of thing?
It was 42. It was the back end of 42. Just before, because I got to leave at Christmas, so it must have been just, you know, say in November or something in 42. We've docked it in Scotland, and we went to a hospital between Edinburgh and Glasgow, and I cannot tell you what that name was. Bathgate, and
what were you doing there?
We were just a stop, maybe a couple of days, and actually I caught up with the lad that I was telling you about. I'm damned if I can remember his name. the one that used to be always in trouble with getting strung up with, you know. And he had a broken femur. He got wounded at Tamimi Aerodrome in an attack there, and he had a broken femur, and he had to wear a caliper on his leg, like, you know. And they got word that, had to stay in the hospital. We weren't allowed out, like, you know. And we had to see the doctor before anything happened. So we saw the doctor, and this lad came back. And he started taking his caliper off, like, you know. I says, "Where are you going?" She says, "I'm going for the paint." And he climbed over the wall with his caliper, without his caliper. Went down at it. He come back, he was pushed into the guard room again. Being drunk and so car, Billy Carr, that's what they called him, Billy Carr. And he was typical what I just said, he was like that, but he had a heart as big as a lion, you know. In the previous tapes I've told you about him being strung up, field punishment with packs on his back and running. And but he had a heart of gold. He was, when without a drink, he was a great lad, you know. And I was to find out after this how good he was, you know.
Had you a reception when you arrived in Glasgow, Scotland?
No, nobody on the quayside, no bands playing. In fact, when I got home and up the door, my mother and father weren't there, so they were next to any bands.
Did you go home straight from Bathgate?
No, we went. We got dispersed, like, you know. I mean, it was just like you got sent to your nearest your hometown, you know. And I got sent to Chesley Street, and you were there too, because I hadn't had a leave. Was nearly two or three years, like, you know. And it was about Christmas time, and I went to Relton Hospital in Chesley Street, and from there I got a 3 week leave. And at this time, my wife, she was my girlfriend, and she got a leave at the same time, when she was in the RAF, like, in the WAFs. And I got pulled, and in them days we weren't allowed collars and ties. And but when we were in the Middle East, some of the lads got the tails cut off their shirts and sewn onto their KD shirt, made a collar, and we used to scrounge ties. From, they did. I wasn't. This was them that went to Cairo and that for. Pardon, and leave. And they used to get ties made, like. Anyway, I got mine done when I came home, and I got an ATS tie off one of the girls. And I went to a dance one day, and of course I used to put my colour and tie on, like, you know. And when I come out, I used to button me battle dress up so you couldn't see it, like, you know. And I got lifted by Red Caps. Two Red Caps pulled us. And could I have your pay book? I'm going to have a pay book. Of course, we didn't have any medals or wound stripes or anything in them days, like, you know. And she says, 3 weeks leave? How can you get 3 weeks leave? I says, well, for one reason. I says, I've never had a leave for 3 years. He says, oh. He says, where have you been? I says, I've been in the desert. I says, I've been 3 years in the Middle East. Right, old soldier. He says, by the way, he says, you're not supposed to wear a collar and tie. As I walked away. I never had a great deal of trouble with Red Caps.
At what point did your parents knew you were coming? Had you been able to send them to them telegrams?
No, I can't remember. In the days of tram cars, you know, I went and got in the tram car and I got home, and there was nobody in. The man was out, but there was a secret place we used to keep the key in the garden, you see. And I went for the key and it wasn't there. And I looked along the street and here's my old man coming, galloping around. I'd never seen him run in his life. And he come running towards us, and he was the most unmotionable man I ever wished to meet. He never made anything of us, like, you know. And I mean, I was the only child, like, you know. And he come up and he flung his arms around us, like, you know. Tears run down his cheeks. And first time I've ever seen my father make any emotion, like, you know. But he's pleased to see us. And my mum come in shortly after that. And what had happened was somebody must have seen us on the tram car. And my dad was having a couple of jars in one of the pubs, like, you know, and they must have went in and told him, like, and he come belting along, like. Because it was the same after Dunkirk. I mean, I was reported missing for 3 or 4 years, you know.
So they would know that you'd been wounded, of course.
Oh, aye, they knew I had been wounded. They knew I was on my way home, probably. They knew. Of course, everything was, you didn't know what was happening. I mean, you just done what you were told and whatever.
What was the reception like within the family and round the neighbourhood?
I was a hero. I was a hero. Oh, aye. First time in my life, not and the last. Yes, I was treated with great respect, you know. And in fact, I got in. Again, I was in a fight with after I got discharged.
But we'll come to that possibly at that time.
Yeah.
You had 3 weeks leave, and as you say, you were quite a hero in the area. At the end of the 3 weeks, what happened to you then?
Went back to Relton, and from Relton I went to Winnick Hospital in Warrington, and I was there quite a while. Well, by this time, you see, I'd been so long, in nearly 12 months in hospital, and I was nearly a medical orderly, like, you know. I used to go and help the nurses make the beds and what have you, and dish the bottles out, you know, and what have you. And when I went to Relton, it was a civvy place, like, you know, where there was no discipline at all, like, you know. And the poor old matron, she'd been a QA in her day, like, you know, in the First World War, like, you know. Well, she didn't have she had a life of a dog, you know. And I remember what the lads used to take it. It was terrible, what they used to get up to. And I remember one day, she came in, you know. She used to, in the morning, she used to clap her hands and shout, "A patient's arise! A patient's arise!" You know. And this morning she comes in and she, "A patient's arise!" And I start to imitate the baby crying, like, you know. And she said, "Who's got this child in here?" Oh, she had a terrible time, that poor old lady. And
How bad at this time with your wound healed? How bad was the arm?
It was like it withered, it shrunk down to, you know, it was like just like a little claw, you know, and it withered because there was two arteries severed and the nerve was paralyzed, you know, and that's why I was kept in the army for. On a category D, which was neither one thing or another, you know. It wasn't a discharge, and it wasn't, in other words, they were keeping us to see if there was any improvement going to happen on the arm, like, you know. And but it didn't get any better at all. But and as I say, I was in hospital for nearly 12 months, and this I was more or less I used to do a lot of work in the, you know, like make beds and help the nurse in any way and give the bottles out and this sort of thing, collect them in. One great story I've got with it. In them days, the bottles didn't used to be made out of cardboard that they are now, like, you know, pressed cardboard. They used to be in China, you know, what we call booty. And I used to go around, I used to have them all on a walking stick, like, and I used to go, oh, what's a bottle, like, you know, and, for the night, and then in the morning I used to go and collect them. And at Chesley Street I went and I collected them and took them into the sluice room. And in the middle of the room there was a big circular, like a circular sink. And it had like a, from the middle of the sink there was like a tube come up with a little ball on the top, and all little ball had little holes in, and they put the bottles on, see, and turn the tap on, and used to rinse all the bottles out, you see, the urine bottles. So I the first time I went, like, and I carried them all down, and I emptied them out, like, and I had to put them onto this tube thing, like, you know. Well, of course, I only had one hand, so I just put the bottle on the thing, and I turned the thing on, the bloody bottle went just like the show when the plastic ball, it went straight up a height, smashed into the thing, and the whole room was covered in water, and I was standing gasping because I was soaking. And the nurse come in, switched the water, well, I switched the water off, like, but she come dashing in, what a state the place was in. There was bits of bottle all over the place or whatever. But that taught us a little lesson as well.
How long were you in this particular hospital?
At Ralton, I was only in, well, I was there 3 weeks for me leave, and it wasn't much longer than that. Once you got your leave, they moved you, and they moved us to
was it Warrington, you said?
Warrington, no.
How long were you there?
Winnick Hospital. I was at Winnick 2 months, I think, something like that.
Then what happened after that?
Then they moved us from there, and they sent us to a convalescent hospital in Leyman, Cheshire. I was only there a week. But one little story I would love to tell you about Winnick. Again, it was a nut house. It was a asylum, like, you know. And I suppose this is the reason why a lot of the nerve injuries was sent there, you know. And there was a lot of blind lads there. Some were one leg, some were one arm, what have you. And this particular time, there was a group of us. And what used to happen, the able-bodied lads who had maybe an arm off or a leg off, but they had their sight, they gathered the blind lads in, and they took the blind lads, like, sort of thing. And the lads didn't have arms, the blind used to be the arms for the lads that didn't have the arms. And so it was, everybody used to muck in and do help each other, you know. And this particular time, we got there was about 30 of us or 40 of us, and we all in blues, like, and we had to go down occupational therapy. Well, it meant that if you had a leg injury or something like that, they used to let you make you kick a football or something like that. And for instance, mine, with maybe having a hand injury, they wanted us to play table tennis and things like that, and use your hand as much as you could. Anyway, we're going down. What had happened was that the inmates of the asylum had all been moved into one wing of the asylum, you see, and there used to be, and it was a beautiful summer's day, I remember, and we were walking down, and them were crutches, and that were them that couldn't walk, the lads was pushing them in wheelchairs, and I was leading the blind lad and what have you, and so on. There was about 30 or 40 were going all down in blues, like. And the nutters, the inmates, are there, that were all sitting on the wall watching, and one of them gets up and he shouts, he gets a hold of his civvy suit, and he gets up and he says, "Where are the buggers that's supposed to be daft?" And I thought to myself, I think he's got something there. There were cripples and all sorts, and they were sitting in the lap of luxury, supposed to be stupid.
After the week convalescing, as you said, at Lynn, where did you go then?
I was sent to Wotton Camp and just outside of Nottingham, and I got back to my friend Billy Carr. And it was there that the incidents happened, where the sergeant major was complaining that I wasn't saluting properly and I wasn't standing to attention properly and that sort of thing. And as it happened, this particular weekend, I bumped into Billy, and Billy's limping around. He had discarded his caliper by this time, and he was limping around like, and come on. He said, "Come on, Bill." He says, "I'll see you." And he laid me kit out and got me calendar done, everything. Wouldn't let me do a thing, you know. And I said, "Look," and I used to get annoyed because I didn't like people helping us, because I knew that eventually I would have to do it myself. And and it was the same when I never let anybody write me letters, even from the very beginning. I let them address me letters, but I never let them write me letters, you know. And I used to write with this hand, and I used to write with my pen,
holding it in
my fist, like, you know. And then gradually the fist come into a finger, and then eventually I was writing just normal with the thing. And but Billy used to look after us later, because he was a lot older than me. Like, I mean, he was an old soldier, like, you know. I mean, he was in maybe about 30, 35, and he was. I remember this particular weekend, and I'd arranged with Jean to come, my girlfriend, my wife now, to come through to Nottingham for a weekend, you see, and I'd booked up the YMCA or somewhere like that, and I was going to pick her up in at the station. And out comes the order, everybody confined to barracks, because there was a contingent to be picked to go to the Middle East, you see. So, but Billy says, "Oh," he says, "it'll be all the one by about 7 o'clock, he says, "and then you can go on, you know, you can go on the thing." I says, "But I haven't got my pass, man." He says, "Oh," he says, not a worry. So anyway, as it happened, the two, he says, "There's no fear us two getting picked." But as it happened, the first two names that come out was Billy's and mine. They gone on this draft back to Middle East. Well, Billy was crippled with one leg, and I mean, my arm was like withered, so we couldn't see any. But anyway, the next day, which was the vital day when the wife was coming, we got taken, we went for a medical, and of course we just couldn't go on, like, you know. And and then the question come up, how was I going to see, meet Jean, like, you see. And so anyway, I approached one of the sergeant majors and sergeants, and so I contacted the quartermaster sergeant. He says, "Well, look," he says, if you get your gear all set up," he says, "whatever," he says, "come to me," and he says, "I'll check it off," and he says, I'll get your pass signed." Billy comes up, gets me kit, lays everything out, goes down to the sergeant's mess, asks for the, you know, he done everything for us, you know, and come up, and we got, that's the sort of thing, and everything he done, I couldn't do a thing for him, and he was a brilliant man, he was, honestly. And he was the biggest villain that ever worked when he had paint and like.
So So after that, what happened to you? How long were you there?
I was there a few weeks, and then I got sent to this little place in Lim in Cheshire. I was only there a week, and then I got sent to I'm getting mixed up, aren't I?
This was after Lim. This is when you were at the first camp after
Lim. That's right.
Hadn't you not had a medical to say whether you were fit enough to continue in the army?
No, not that I can remember. They just sent us out. I just went to Nottingham.
And how long were you in Nottingham?
Oh, I wasn't there very long. Maybe it's a month, I think. And then I went to Shudi Camps on 6th Battalion, and I was there about 4 weeks. I knew I was preparing to go to on D-Day.
It was the spring of 1944.
Yeah, and
what were you doing there?
Oh, general body mucking around, orderly room runner. I got into another fight. I got the job of cleaning the orderly room out and that sort of thing. And I got mixed up with this Yorkie. I don't know what was the man, but he was doing the same as me, and. We had to clean the orderly room up and orderly room officers and things like that. I was category D, I wasn't category C or anything, it was D, and they were waiting to see what was going to happen. And so this particular morning we had to get up at 5:30 in the morning, 5 o'clock, and clean the officers out and what have you. And this morning I was cleaning the CO's officers out. And this Yorkie comes in late, and he says, I want that brush, Jody. I says, just a minute. I says, I'll give you it when I'm finished. I says, I'm busy sweeping this up. So I says, I want it now. I says, you can't get it now, Yorkie. I says, I'm using it. He says, I'll take it off you. I says, okay. I says, take it off us. So he tried to take us up, and I hit him, you know.
These were general duties, basically,
this battalion prepared for D-Day. Yeah, this was the colonel's office, and I hit him against one of them pot stores, and of course the pot store has a pipe up, and a pipe right along, and of course he knocked all the pipe down, and all the soot and everything was all over the place, And I've never seen anybody fight with one arm. We should have had this, And this guy, he hadn't a clue. He was absolutely. And he was keep coming at us, and I was keep hitting him, and he was coming at us, and I was hitting him. And at the finish, I let me temper had gone down by this time. I said, look, Yorkie. I says, get away, will you? And take the brush. I said, get away. And so he went away, and I tidied up as best I could in the colonel's office, because there was soot all over the place. And I gone into the half an hour or so afterwards, I went into the orderly room where he was sitting, and he was dabbing. I'd split his nose, and I had split his ear. And I only had one hand, understand? I had a glove on. I had a glove on, because to use when I was picking the coke up, and he was bleeding it from his nose and his ears, and I went up to him and I says, I'm sorry, Yorkie. I says, I lost my temper. I says, you shouldn't get aggravated. I says, at 5:30 in the morning, I says, not the best of times, I says, to keep your temper. He says, oh, he says, I'm not finished with you yet. I says, so I get him up, I says, get out there. And you've never seen anybody fight like him. He was absolutely hopeless. And we were on two duck boards outside, and it was two duck boards together, and the rest of it was a sea of mud, and he was running up to us with his hand like this, you know, with it behind him, not squared up or anything like that. He was just running at us. What he said, well, I was just hitting him, and well, on the tugboards, I was just stepping to one side, and he ended up full length in the clots.